About time for true crime.
Hey.
Hi.
Hey, guys.
How are you all doing? Welcome to About Time for True Crime.
Your favorite true crime podcast?
Did you guys just... I think you did. Are we defining the pod relationship?
Thank you so much. You shouldn't have.
DTPR. Well, you're our favorite listener. You.
Aww.
But we have so much to talk about and so little time. How are you guys doing? First of all, how's your week? Happy drop day. Happy Tuesday. Happy whatever day you're listening. Happy yes. whatever night you're listening. I don't know you.
Happy whatever day / night that ends in Y.
Yes. I hope there's a vowel in it. So.
Yeah. What are you doing? We ask this periodically, but I have to know. I have to ask again. Are you getting ready? Are you driving to work? Are you driving home from work? Are you at work? You sly dog. I see what you're doing. Are
I'm
you
in all the, for it.
Are you in the shower?
Ooh,
are
naked.
You naked under all those clothes, you whore?
What
I don't
a
know.
Slut. I love it. I will say I'm disappointed that it's July. Pride
Why?
Month hath ended. So all the corporations get to go back to changing their logos back to whatever their normal colors are.
That's true. And they do it. July 1st.
Yeah, honestly, some of them did it at 11:59, okay? But it was a good one. It was not as celebrated as I was hopeful, but I am in the middle of moving. So I am covered in bug bites and bruises and not particularly pleased with that, but it's almost done.
We could probably make a game of the bruises on your legs right now. That
oh,
is
yeah.
not okay.
No, it's to the point where I'm like convinced some of my clients are going to ask me if I feel safe at home. Like
I know it.
I mean, yes, they're all small, but there are so many of them.
I know. Abby has been moving. And if you are new here, Abby is a very big klutz.
Oh, man.
There is nothing... There is nothing quite like walking anywhere with Abby, especially if she's got coffee in her hand, because she's going down, man.
Oh, and the coffee's going up. No, I save it most of the time.
You will save it, but if anything, the coffee is going straight up a wall or a staircase or something. But normally, the coffee survives. It's everything else that doesn't.
I have my priorities straight, okay?
Abby was carrying a plant downstairs, and it was the most awkward fall I've ever seen, where she fell with both knees forward.
Yep.
Like fell with her butt on her ankles, kind of. I don't know if you can picture it, but like, what an awful way to fall down the stairs. And I just
thank you.
It was, and I just had to watch in like horror, because I just had to, like, I watched it happen. I could do nothing about it except just try to like grab you, but couldn't help in any way. And I mean, you limped for a little afterwards, but the plant was fine.
I think I broke my toe.
That was the time. I'm
yes.
pretty sure you did.
I'm pretty sure I did, and I saved the plant.
That's the plant was great.
Plants and coffee take priority over my bones and ligaments, apparently.
Yeah. So, I mean, but going anywhere, like I've been with Abby where she's been just standing still, where there was a ledge and she was in, like, I'm the heel wearer because I'm quite short. If you've heard Abby make fun of me before.
She is 2 feet tall.
I'm 5 feet tall. Okay. Abby is quite a bit taller than me. And I think we've learned that she has her, I would say maybe her strong suit in like flats.
I genuinely am equally klutzy in both. I just am such a klutz that at some point I decided like, I don't need to risk it for this biscuit.
Yep.
You know?
Well, she was wearing heels one time and we were just standing on this landing, weren't going anywhere, mid-conversation with somebody else. And she gets too close to the ledge and her heel caught, and she just, stiff as a board, was like standing up and then was flat down on the floor like a pancake. Like, and it, I looked around and I'm like, where'd Abby go? And she's down, just
wait,
down for the count.
Wait, was that like the first week we were working together?
First month, if that. I mean, seriously, I was like, is that, what's her name again? Is she, aw, can we
no,
help her
and
up?
We, literally, I was walking downstairs. And the last stair, my heel hooked on, like, you know, the little grippies that they put on the corners of stairs. It was that. And I was there 1 second and the next I was on the ground.
No, but I think you were down all the stairs. Then it was a landing and you were sitting, you were talking to somebody standing there. And then you took like one extra step down, done. That was it.
I just remember seeing everybody's face and then seeing people's shoes. And I was like, damn it.
Again.
That's, yeah, it's what it's like to pee me. It's not great.
So I was like, oh, Abby. So our friendship pretty much started with like, okay, I'll get her books. Like,
yeah. I mean, you are definitely, I'll laugh at you first and help you up then. But you do always help
me up. I will help you up as I'm laughing. Like, I will get down there immediately and help you, but I will chuckle. I have to. If we're not laughing, we're crying. Every and we time. Have to laugh at ourselves.
We
if,
do.
If we can't do that, what are we here for?
So with all of that to be said, I'm moving. I hate it. My body looks like in a war zone. We also both have ADHD, if you couldn't tell.
Oh, my goodness. Well, in some true crime news.
Yes.
We do record these typically a week to 2 weeks ahead of time, depending on timing. So it was yesterday that the Karen Reed trial came to a close and the jury was, I don't know, deadlocked and the judge declared a mistrial. So we'll see if they're going to try her again.
I'm super interested. I want to hear. I will say, as we were looking into some of that and just sort of doing our little due diligence, as you will, we saw that a bunch of people were recommending the series, The Octopus Murders. Yeah, it's on Netflix. But what I think is interesting about it is the reason it was getting recommended was people were saying that even though it's like an entirely separate case, subject, whole thing, they were looking at how interesting it is to see the difficulty of finding the truth when there are so many conflicting theories and ideas going on.
And they were comparing it to the Karen Reed case.
Yes. And just sort of looking at those themes of how easy can you find the truth if you have all of these proposed theories already?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it definitely hits close to here because, I mean, as we'll talk about in a little bit, Abby is a transplant here from the Midwest, but we are located in New England. And this case happened in Massachusetts. So the victim in the case was I believe a Boston police officer.
Yeah.
So like very close. Especially, I mean, most people can find that on a map here. So very, very interesting. Really put Massachusetts back on the map for sure. Yes, in the true crime realm for sure, but definitely one that we'll keep our eyes on. I don't want to comment on it quite yet because I haven't followed it as closely as I'd want to, and I tend to want to have more information before I cast an opinion, but...
Yeah, that seems wise.
But the jury had... I know that the jury had come back to the judge and said, like, we cannot agree here. We're getting nowhere. And the judge sent them back and said,
do it again.
Like, figure it out. You need to try. And they tried again, and they came back and still said, we are where we were.
Hung juries are so interesting. I think it would be a really fun CJ short if anybody's interested.
We're so dorky.
Yeah. Yeah.
You guys have to let us know if you are interested in that, because Abby and I are just best friends that do this, and like we talk about this whether the mics are on or not. This is just our life.
Yeah.
We're weird. We work in the field, we're educated in the field, and we do this on the side. So if you couldn't tell, like this is our spot, this is our place, this is our corner.
It's a special topic. Yeah.
So if you want that, let us know. We'll plug the mics in. If not, also let us know. You gotta tell us. You tell us, baby.
Yeah, I think that's the one thing about the CJ shorts is that we sort of hold off on doing a ton of them because we would and we will. But most of the time people are interested in cases. So we try not to bombard you with our little like, and statistics say this. And yes. Did you know that this? Like,
right, exactly.
But in that same breath, did you know that last week we talked about Bosco sticks?
Yes.
I love Bosco sticks. And for the 2/3 of you that have no idea what it is, I am so sorry for your loss. How are you grieving?
We had so many messages from people being like, hey, so what's a Bosco stick? And I was, and like, of course, I run the Instagram mostly. So I'm answering people like, beats the hell out of me.
Yep. Beats the fuck out of me, brother. So, it is. Hold on. Hold on.
No, Abby's got a Google search for you. So hold on to your butt.
From www.boscosticks.com.
Bosco sticks.
Bosco sticks make your tummy say thank you and your stomach smile. They make everyone say yum from the schoolyard to the backyard.
Results may vary.
Literally. And if you're really curious, they are really just breadsticks stuffed with cheese and topped with garlic butter and Parmesan.
Again, I mean, it sounds like something that would be for me. It's just that I don't think it made its way to New England.
It's just that out here, you guys are lacking in the Bosco stick department. And I'm not afraid to say it, but there is a way.
We don't even have a Bosco stick department.
That's the problem. I think you should elect me as town Bosco stick champion. I will be the ambassador.
Yeah, wherever there would have been like a Bosco stick warehouse, they're just dunks.
That being said, you can get 24 per case for $63 on Amazon. A steal.
Which leads us to our sponsored ad. No, I'm just kidding.
Bosco Stick, sponsor me. I'm the only one championing you right now.
And use promo code. No, I'm kidding.
But use promo code Bosco Sticks for True Crime.
For ATFTC Pod.
It's about time for Bosco Sticks. Thank you.
It's about time.
All right. That being said, I learned that Bosco Sticks are from Michigan. So that is probably why you guys out here are so mean. Because you just didn't have enough warm goodness of dairy.
Is that why we drive the way we do?
Yeah. If everybody had a Bosco stick in their passenger seat.
It's the pedal on the right, you son of a bitch.
That would be a great ad. Honestly, I should go into marketing.
Yeah, what are you doing here?
I don't know.
Not for the money.
Gotta go. All right. See you later. I'm just kidding. But I am returning to the Midwest today.
Ooh.
Yes.
I get to go. Yay. I've never been.
Yes. Welcome. And actually, you get to go to my sweet home, Chicago.
Ooh.
Yes.
Very excited.
Today, I'm going to talk about Al Capone.
Yes. Italian mobster. Let's go.
I know. I combined my two favorite things, Italians and Chicago.
Hell yeah. Yeah. Babe, you shouldn't have.
Oh, well, I did.
Oh.
So, skippers, stop skipping.
Hey.
Yoo-hoo. Hello.
Pod's on.
Howdy. And welcome to About Time for True Crime. A true crime podcast put on by two besties who are actually educated in true crime, which is oddly rare.
Surprisingly. Yep.
We hope you like sarcasm, deadpan humor, and nerds who want to find a way to learn something even through the shittiest shit. So today I have a very special case for you. I want to share a childhood fascination, a cultural icon, the man, the myth, the infamous legend, Al Capone. Now, you probably know that because you clicked on it, and now you know it because I already gave you the little woohoo, but woo. I'm so stupid excited. I do think it's going to be potentially three parts. It might be two. It just depends on how efficient my ADHD brain can be for part two, because there's a lot to cover there.
Depends what you mean by efficient, though, because ADHD brain, Abby, can hyperfixate and be amazeballs. And give us, like, the best of the best deep dives.
I mean, if you want 8.5 hours on the JonBenet Ramsey case, we got that. So, hyperfixation does do a bit. But I think it's hard with mafia stuff because there's so many different players to keep in mind. Like, there's so many different names. There's so many different politics and sort of relational drama that sort of feeds the machine, if you will.
Yeah, because you got like Mikey and Fat Tony. And
Cousin Christopher.
Cousin Christopher.
He must have crawled under there for warmth. Sorry, you guys. I just spent like a year and a half watching The Sopranos for the first time.
And so what? No fucking ZD then?
Hey!
Hey!
Oh!
Oh!
And now everything that goes through my head is just a Christopher quote.
When I tell you.
I didn't.
I was so excited for her to watch The Sopranos because that's my shit. I think I've probably rewatched everything but the last season. Come on, get over yourself. So many times. And been waiting for someone to quote it with me that I finally have someone. Like, we need matching Bada Bing shirts. We need the whole nine, okay?
We're having a Pauly summer.
But you know what? We're getting there. Either way, we're very happy. And
We love to see it. I'm so sorry for all of the Sopranos
references that we're going to have here.
It's going to happen.
If you haven't seen it, you should. I mean, take away the dated cell phones.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Oh,
it's fun.
I love it.
I also...
What, my pussy? His name's Pussy. I know. It makes sense.
Okay.
You just have to watch it and you'd know it. Otherwise, that sounds out of...
A little fun fact for you. The thing that got me to watch The Sopranos was my roommate and I have this friend who texted us and was like, they killed off Pussy. And that's all we got.
Spoiler alert.
Okay, come on. It's fucking decades old. 20 okay.
Years, 25 years old.
That's what got me to watch the show. I was like, how are they murdering Pussy?
That's pretty bold of them to assume.
I didn't think they could show that years ago.
Did a man write that?
Right?
He thinks.
And she said, yeah. Woo.
Killed it. Anyway, sorry.
Anywho.
Anyways. God, Abigail, you are just off topic.
I will issue a quick trigger warning for violence, old gangs, mafia, misogyny, and old-timey slang, and like really bad nicknames.
I love really bad nicknames.
Like really bad nicknames. And as always, just to list my sources at the top, I used a few History Channel documentaries, the podcast Mysterious Circumstances. They had a three-part series called Al Scarface Capone, which was phenomenal. Heavily recommend. I also used FBI.org, PBS, the Mob Museum, the Italian-American One Voice Coalition, and more. But I also wanted to do a really big shout-out to myalcaponemuseum.com. When we talk about fixations, unlike hyperfixation, Abby can get fucking into something, okay? Mm-hmm. I think this entire man's hyperfixation. It is so thorough. I think he has like the most combined articles on Al Capone and his family, different photos of them. He's like tracked down different census records and different families where their names were spelled wrong and tracked them down that way. Like it is in depth.
So it's not a series of blog posts. He's actually found different sources confirming and kind of cataloged all the information that way. Okay.
Yeah. And it's pretty cool because he'll have like newspaper clippings. He'll have old journals and sort of he'll put them all up and then he'll put a little blurb on what he thinks of them and how he thinks it all connects. So okay. It's been really interesting.
I like that.
Mm-hmm. But... we will, of course, have all of these linked below. They will be in a hyperlink to a Google Doc because there is no chance in hell they're all fitting in these description boxes.
Yeah, they don't give us enough characters for that, you guys.
No, so rude. But I want to start. That being said, before we hop right into Al, we do need to talk culture. We need to talk the times. We need to talk discrimination and the American dream and Chicago.
Chicago?
From now on, I'm calling this city Chicago.
Yes.
I like it.
A wee history lesson for you all takes us back to 1880 when the Italians and Sicilians first started immigrating to America in large numbers.
You called?
Hello.
Hey.
As the case often is with anywhere, but I can say at least for sure in America because I had to take so many American history classes, we are not particularly warm and welcoming to people and things we don't know.
Mm.
And this was no different. So you may be used to stereotypes like the organized crime element, thanks to movies like The Godfather, My Cousin Vinny, or TV shows like The Sopranos. Hey!
Hey!
Oh!
Oh!
You might also think about stereotypes with Italians, such as everyone being Catholic, being loud, talking with their hands, getting emotional, or being short and hairy. Which
find the lie, though.
While some of these things may be true of some, like being 2 feet tall.
Fuck off.
Or emotional.
You're calling me emotional and angry.
Whoa, put the hands down. I think those are some that can be applied to like many cultures and backgrounds. So I wouldn't necessarily call that an Italian thing specifically. What is the hand thing called?
It's the Italian hand thing. I mean, I don't know.
Okay.
It's just
a flick of the wrist.
It says so much with so little.
It's honestly, it's not even like a flick. It's like a bounce. It's like a subtle bounce.
But it's in. But it's in the bounce. It's in the bounce. There's one, but like it's in the speed at which you come down.
Yes.
It is. It is. Because it can be like you're joking around. You can be serious. That can be like you're in trouble. You're dead to me.
That's true. It is a very...
It's got range.
It's very much a punctuation, I feel like.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So anyway, there are all of these stereotypes. I mean, even fucking on TikTok, there's like the mob wife fashion trend where women are dressing up in like cheetah print and bold red lipstick and like they... perm their hair and tease it to the fucking gods and then comb through it with their long acrylic nails and giant pumps.
I know.
And I'm like, first of all, walk, walk, fashion baby, you know, but
Adriana, come on.
Don't get me wrong. It is not a bad trend. It's just not necessarily one that's actually indicative of Italian people. You know what I mean?
Oh my God.
That being said, particularly in the late 1800s and early 1900s, Italians were coming to America in like major numbers. And this was because there was severe poverty and economic hardship, limited job opportunities, and a lack of unified politics and more back in Italy and Sicily. So in this 30, 40 year span, something like 4 million Italians immigrated to America between 1880 and 1920. Which is a shitload of people. If you think about it, that's a million people every 10 years.
Yeah, of those were mine.
And as mentioned, it wasn't a warm welcome. People weren't standing there with signs like, "We're so glad you made it. Where's the gabagool?" You know? No, instead it was like in 1891, one of the largest lynchings took place, killing 11 innocent Italian-American individuals. So, super warm and fuzzy.
Mm.
And once again, that was not very gabacool. So, that's a recycled dad joke, but it's not a bad one.
No.
And it's all mine.
I like it. So,
take that, old Facebook posts.
Yeah.
That being said, Italians often took root in neighborhoods together. And this happens a lot with most major immigration waves. From what I've seen documented, where cultures of people stay settled together for community, protection, and connection when the world is a little bit hostile.
Mm-hmm.
Italian-centric neighborhoods in New York at the time were centered around like East Harlem, which in 1930 had over 81% of the population consider themselves first or second generation Americans, which is pretty cool.
Look at East Boston today, or at least... look at East Boston around that time.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
there were sections of, you know, northern and eastern Boston that's where you'd find them.
And for years, like even up until the 1970s, like with Whitey Bulger, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
There's roots.
Oh, yeah.
They run deep. So some of these neighborhoods were East Harlem, the Bronx, Brooklyn, and Queens. And if you've ever seen the movie adaptation of Newsies with Christian Bale, young Christian Bale, I think all of Brooklyn, like all of the Brooklyn Newsies were supposed to be Italian. Have no fear, Brooklyn is here. And they like throw fucking rotten tomatoes at people.
Oh no.
I mean, they were heroes in that sense, but...
it's good to win one.
It is. So all of that to say, being Italian was no easy feat in this wave of immigration. You're coming from one land of desolation without a hope for a fair or prosperous future to a land where there might be hope for a prosperous future, but it's dangerous and unwelcoming. So,
I mean, there was all the hope in the world. It was just, you know, you had to deal with that. But I mean, there's racism everywhere. Always.
Yep.
I mean, that's...
and for any number of reasons. Something that I found super interesting, and I think I actually wrote a paper on, but to be honest with you, all of college is a fever dream for me. I find it so fascinating how the idea of whiteness is ever expanding. So most of the time now, if, you know, you're going to the doctor and you have to check off what your cultural background is, mm-hmm. white is an option, but Italian isn't separate on there.
No.
And once upon a time, it would have been.
Oh, yeah.
So whiteness as a concept is just ever expanding and adapting to add new people in that we once were like,
you don't count.
We don't know about you.
Exactly.
And now that we quote unquote do, you can be one of us. Which
oh,
is
I mean.
Just fucking wild. I am so fascinated by that as a phenomenon. I like to believe that we get more educated and we include more people based off of the knowledge that we are all just people.
I also like to think that we all try to raise our kids to be better people. Like, we're supposed to get better.
So.
We're all supposed to get better with generations.
But you're right. It wasn't great. And I want to be very clear that what we're going to talk about today and in the next episode or two is not going to necessarily combat a lot of those stereotypes. But it is not because they are true. It is because this man was a piece of poop. A very cool piece of poop, but a piece of poop.
I mean, stereotypes existed because of people like this.
Yes.
It wasn't that everybody was like this.
Correct. And as we always say, like, the extremists in any group have the loudest voices. So
yeah, they're the
if
ones.
If he's going to be the extreme one, people are going to know about him.
Exactly.
So much like any other culture in any other city in any other time, there's the main culture, popular culture, if you will, and there are subsects of that. And in sociology and criminology, we learn that there's all sorts of reasons that people reject the main culture. And in this case, I think it's pretty easy to fucking understand why you might not want to be friends with the person that calls you.
Fill in the blank.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I could say a few I won't say here.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, I don't know any Italian slurs, but that's probably a good thing. So here, I think there are a lot of people that join together in gangs for like street crime, but also organized crime, because they're sort of protecting their own. This is our culture. This is what we're doing to provide for our people.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes sense to me. Not that it's right or good in the way that a lot of these things happened, but I think it's understandable to follow the logic, right?
I mean, take a race or a nationality out of it. Group mentality and that kind of thing exists everywhere across everything. So, I mean, that doesn't
matter.
What was
that? Mob mentality?
Yes. I was trying to avoid saying that. But yeah, that kind of like herd mentality that people have and that underbelly of society where you're involved in illegal or illicit things and you're not going to go to the police and you're not going to go to those pro-social things. You're right. Going to make your own not pro-social things, and you're going to make your own justice, and you're going to make your own version and rules along pretty much your own equivalents, just your side of the fence.
Right. And not to bring the Sopranos into it again, but just that whole, we take care of our own. Like, we had to, so now we just do.
Yeah, I mean, we take care of, in a good way, but we take care of the bad ones too.
Mm-hmm. So, mafias and mobs are a little bit different than gangs that most people hear about. Because most gangs that you hear about are a little too close to home. Like, the south side of Chicago, right? Mm-hmm. You think street gang. You think property crimes. You think violence. You think robberies, thefts, assaults. You don't think a businessman wrapped up with a, it's been a pleasure.
Right.
And then someone's going to curb stomp you if you don't pay what you owe us plus 800% interest. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's not quite what most people think. But make no mistake, it is technically in definition a gang. It's just a white collar crime gang, basically.
Yeah, I mean, they might have nicer clothes.
Right, exactly. But the mafia, at least the ones we're about to talk about, would buy over powerful politicians, police officers, embezzle, and they'd get away with literal murder because they could.
Oh, their power was so far reaching.
I mean, truly, by the end of his reign, Al Capone had owned Chicago, which is so fascinating. And you know what? He never got fucking caught for that.
Dang.
Truly. It's all right. It's an ironic death that we'll get to for him.
Yeah, we will.
Yeah. But all of that to be said, we are going to hop into Mr. Capone.
Okay.
So we're going to zoom into New York City, mm-hmm. Brooklyn, to be exact, in 1899. A wee baby boy, Alphonse Gabriel Capone, was born on January 17th, 1899, to Gabriel and Teresa Capone, two fresh Italian immigrants who called their baby boy Al.
Yeah.
His father, a barber, and his mother, a seamstress, had come over from Ungary, a small commune outside of Naples. Al's parents had immigrated just a few years earlier in 1893 and settled near a naval yard at 95 Navy Street in Brooklyn.
Hmm.
Mm. Al was the fourth of nine children.
Dang.
Meaning he had eight other siblings. And we'll talk about some of them later, but don't worry about remembering all their names. They'll come up next episode.
Good Catholics.
Yes. But they had James Vincenzo Capone, mm-hmm. who later changed his name to Richard Hart and became a prohibition agent in Homer, Nebraska. They had...
That's ironic.
Right? No, I think that was more reactionary than ironic, in all honesty. Okay. They had Raphael James Capone, also known as Ralph Capone, or here's the first of the fun nicknames, Bottles.
Why?
Well, he took charge of Al's beverage industry later on in life.
Aw, damn it.
Then there was Salvatore Capone, who went by Frank.
Sure.
I get it. I mean, I don't know. Sal is kind of a fun shortened version of Salvatore, but that would just be so long to write on all your job applications.
Sal?
Salvatore.
Yeah, versus Frank?
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe anyway. Just go Sal.
I like Sal.
Sal's fine.
There was Ermina Capone, but she unfortunately died as a baby at one.
Oh.
And there was Ermino Capone, Albert Capone, Matthew Capone, and Mafalda Capone.
Never heard that name before. That's pretty.
I quite like it. That being said, Al grew up in a full home.
Of course.
And while his dad was a barber and his mom a seamstress, they were pretty well known in their neighborhood. Al's dad allegedly owned like this pool hall, which was pretty well known. So they were really respected. And Gabriel and Teresa really encouraged their kids to be good Americans. They're like, we live here. You need to create a community here. So they went to church. They were strong Catholics and they were at church functions. They were at community functions. They did extracurriculars. They did their school stuff. They played sports. Like they were for quite a while, very good citizens.
It sounds like the parents really wanted them to, you know, they said, you're here now. We gave up everything from there to be here because we wanted you to be here because we wanted you guys to grow up right. this way with these things.
And take advantage of the opportunities here.
Like,
and
get involved. Learn all of the things. Like, be American. Do the sports. Go to church. Get involved. Be social. Make friends. Do right and do right by us.
And I think that, you know, I am not a child of first generation or second generation immigrants. So I don't know the pressure that comes with a lot of that. It sounds like a lot of pressure. But it also sounds like a lot of really well-intended hopes and dreams, right? Of like, here we are. You can't do these things if you squander that shot by doing something stupid. So you have to be smart. You have to be on it. You have to be in this community. And honestly, they were. Al was a good student and he showed promise. I've heard accounts and now I can't say for certain because I haven't seen any tests. I've heard he was a wee lacking in the brains department, but I don't know how true that is. If he was at all, it must have been, in my opinion, in book smarts, because I think he does a very good job with people management. Like, he knows how to manipulate his reputation. He knows how to do what he needs to do to keep people on his side and also afraid of him.
I don't think you end up owning Chicago because you're an idiot.
Exactly. So, again, he did struggle to behave, though. He was smart. He was bright. But he did get expelled from his Catholic school at 14 for hitting a female teacher in the face.
Oh.
So, not the best, you know?
No.
And afterwards, with only an eighth grade education, Al worked random jobs to help support his family. He worked at a candy store for a while, a bowling alley. One of my favorites, and this is actually probably my favorite Al Capone fun fact, he even played semi-professional baseball for a few years.
Are you serious?
I am. Okay. He played with his brother Ralph, okay, which is really cute. Anywhere Ralph went, Al went. He was like, okay, I'll do it if my brother's doing it. Aww. Which is cute.
If only he had stuck in that path.
Right.
We would have known Al Capone for a different reason.
And he actually was good. I mean, to be fair, the team he was on was losing at first. They had him as like a first baseman, but then they decided to make him the pitcher and they started doing really well.
Okay.
And Al.
Damn it, Al.
Right. Al was so good. It was, I don't know, it's pretty phenomenal. We'll post a picture. There's like different newspaper clippings of him in like the sports section of newspapers from this time.
Wow.
And I think they're really cute. And something that makes me laugh is someone who knew Al from this time in his life was like, yeah, no, he wasn't fat then. He only got fat once he went to Chicago.
It's maybe like all those hot dogs.
It's probably all the Bosco sticks.
All the Bosco sticks. Damn it.
That being said.
And for $63.99, they can be yours.
Tomorrow. So it was during this time that Al had met a lady that he liked a lot. And Al's always been kind of a flirt. And you'll see that does not stop. But he meets a lady he quite likes. Her name is May Josephine Coughlin. And despite the fact that she was Irish.
Uh-oh.
They hit it off. And yes, there is historically like a little bit of rivalry between the Irish Americans and the Italian Americans.
A little bit.
I'm summarizing for the sake of brevity, but apparently they hit it off, and it was in 1918 that May had gotten pregnant and Al gave up baseball and got married to her. And now I'm not sure if the age of consenting to marriage was older back then or if it was because of the cultures, but both of their parents had to write a letter sort of supporting their marriage. Which is very interesting.
I wonder if it was less about age of consent and more about the church.
It could be, especially with the pregnancy involved.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, maybe it was the church. I don't know what kind of support they would need, especially if it's like a premarital
but they were, pregnancy. Were they both adults?
They were. They okay. were both in their 20s. Al might have been 19.
Okay.
Yeah, because it was 1918. But, I mean, he's still over 18. You know what I
right.
mean? So, as far as I know, both of their families were in support, which is pretty cool, especially for the times and, you know, some of those conflicts going
yeah,
on.
Yeah, you better marry her and you better take care of it. And
boy, did he.
Provide.
So the two started a marriage that ended truly years later only in Al's death. So they said, till death do us part, and it did. Which I don't want to say is like a feat. But I feel like with all of the information we're about to hear, it says a lot about their commitment.
It could. I will bring it also back to religion that it could be that divorce was so frowned upon. And if I bring that up, if that's a big part of their life, it's if it's not, then maybe not.
Well, and I was going to say either it's commitment to each other or to their religion.
Right.
So either way, it's some fucking dedication somewhere.
Absolutely.
But their son, Albert Francis Capone, they called him Sonny, which is really cute, I think.
Okay, Godfather.
And they had actually, he had actually lost almost all of his hearing in his left ear in really early childhood. I think he had an issue with like his medial eardrum.
You could tell me whatever you want to call it and I'll believe you.
Well, hey, any doctors around, don't make me sound super dumb, but am I right? Or
yeah, you're right. You're right.
I am not a doctor in ears, so I'm not a doctor in anything, but definitely not ears. With Sonny's hearing loss, Al no longer playing semi-professional baseball and a wife and a child to take care of, Al went back to get another silly little job. Anything to pay the bills, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he settled around Coney Island this time.
Mm-hmm.
And this turned out to be the decision of a lifetime for Al. Because At Coney Island, Al had met Frankie Yale, who became like a mentor to him.
Like a positive mentor?
Sure.
Okay.
I'm not sure the exact timeline here, but a lot happened pretty quickly.
Okay.
So in no particular order, Al got this job at a Coney Island bar and brothel called the Harvard Inn. Frankie Yale was a bartender here, and I don't know if that connection is what got him the job or if the job created that connection. Then Al became involved with more than one gang, which, at least to my knowledge in today, is pretty rare, but I don't know if that was more common back then to be in association with multiple different organizations like that. But Al became involved with the Junior 40 Thieves, the Bowery Boys, the Brooklyn Rippers, and ultimately a very powerful gang named the Five Points Gang.
Okay.
Now, Al, from all accounts, was a good man to May and Sonny, but he wasn't particularly faithful. And he did not ever turn down a good time after the wedding.
A mobster not faithful to his wife.
But that wasn't always the good time he was hoping for, even if he always said yes to a good time. Things continued to take a turn for Al when he earned his nickname Scarface. Al had been slashed 3 times across the face, which resulted in loads of stitches.
Yikes.
The tale on how he got the scars changes in nearly every source you see, but there are 2 main stories. The first includes him working as a bouncer at this nightclub, the Harvard Inn. And he makes a comment towards Lena Galluccio, who is the sister of like another, you know, tough guy. His name is Frank Galluccio. Mm-hmm. And Al was like, oh, hot mama. Yes. Right. He's like, I want to take you home. And by that, I mean here because I have a wife at home.
Correct.
Also, you're so hot. Mamma mia. Right.
Exact quote.
And yes. End quote. Al Capone, 1918. But there are, again, depending on the source you ask, a few different things that happened. Either Al was like, yes, into this. And he was a persistent boy. I mean, he was charming, don't get me wrong. And he was handsome. He was like 5'10 and like an athletic build still at the time. And he said, Lena, you got a rockin' bod. Mm. Actually, there is an exact quote. He said, and I quote, you got a nice ass, honey, and I mean that as a compliment. Believe me.
Believe you me.
Oh, I do. I know.
You know what really... you know what really Danny's my DeVito?
What?
When they say shit like that, but it's just like, hey, this is objective. Don't take it the wrong way. Don't... Hey, I'm saying that like... I'm saying that like person to person, you know?
You
like,
got a nice ass, honey, and that's a compliment.
Yeah, like I don't get in a little huff about it. I'm just saying, go telling your boyfriend about it.
I always get pissed off when people tell me I have a nice ass. It's perfect, I know. No, I'm kidding.
Like what?
So again, there are a few different things here. Either Frank heard this and was like, "That's my fucking sister," you know, or Al was a little too persistent, and Lena was like, "I don't know, I'm not into it."
Yeah, she felt scared.
Yeah, and he kept coming up and being like, listen, you got a nice ass, honey. You know what I mean?
He's like, come here, you see?
Yes. Come over here. I got a little something in the back room, you see? So in that version of the story, Frank beats him up because Lena's uncomfortable.
Right.
But either way, night ends in this story with Frank slashing Al 3 times in the face with a knife, which resulted in 30 stitches.
Damn, that's a lot of stitches.
It is. They said, it's going to give you a lifetime of scars. And I was like, I hope not. And then his nickname became Scarface.
They didn't do stitches on the face like they do today. They just friggin' sewed that up like half-assed. They're like, we hope that heals right. We have no fucking idea what we're doing. Yep.
That's like probably staples.
Like we have got no idea how we're...
Beats the fuck out of us. Good luck.
We got no idea treatment-wise. None of it.
Hey, guys. So it is post-recording editing Abby, and I just wanted to put in a few things here because there are a few lovely little things that have come to my attention since we recorded this. So the first is that Frank Galluccio actually did not have a sister, Lena. That, to me, basically means this entire story is a hoax. However, I do want to just note in there that Frank Galluccio still has, like, reportedly said things like, fuck him, he deserved it 50 years later. So I don't know if that's true. Perhaps Lena wasn't the correct name. Perhaps Frank didn't have a sister at all. Who knows? But you should know that. The other story that is believed to be how Al got his scars, however, is that he was jumped by two men in the middle of the night in Brooklyn. This is one of those that you can actually see in newspaper clippings from myalcaponemuseum.com. I recommend looking it up, but they do just essentially talk about how he was treated. He didn't know who his assailants were, and they jumped him in the middle of the night. And it's a pretty cut and dry story. There's not really any background to it. Initially, I really did believe that Frank's story seemed more legit because there were so many details, but I think this is one of those cases of, if you're lying, you're giving me too much, baby. You're giving us too much detail. But I just wanted to let you all know that. Regardless, he does end up in a hospital, and there are hospital records of him getting treated and all of this. So how it happened, we're not sure.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, if you did ask Al, and anyone who did, heard that they were scars from World War One.
Okay.
Was Al ever in World War One? No.
Okay. Sounds but like Maureen Sniper from last episode.
Yep. But I tend to believe the nightclub story again. And maybe it was an ego boost for Frank to say it was him. Who really knows? I don't. But after all of that happened, some reports say that Frank was upset and really kind of disappointed in himself for getting that angry and violent.
Mm.
Others say that he's said, fuck him, he deserved it, up to 50 years later. So,
beats the hell out of me.
Beats the hell out of me. And it beat the hell out of Al. So
that it did. 30 stitches worth.
Now, as Al had been swept up into gangs, he had been taken under the wings of a few other Italian businessmen at the time. They were not in waste management, though. Not these ones.
Mm.
If you believe the nightclub story, Frank Galluccio was the man who slashed Al. And essentially, the Italian businessmen had a little sit-down arrangement meeting. Basically, they were like, hold hands and say you're sorry. You know what I mean?
Oh.
If you guys can't get along, we're going to make you hug until you can.
Oh.
And if true, whatever they worked out seemed to stick. Because later on, like years later on, Al even hired Frank as a bodyguard for the time being. And paid him handsomely for the time. But if not, well, maybe you keep your enemies closer. I don't know. But if that was the case, he at least always smiled and played nice, if he didn't believe it. Ain't that just the way?
Hmm.
Now, it should be known, even in these rough and tumble situations, Al and many other Italian Americans at the time really prided themselves for upholding their family values. Yes, we will take care of, in the bad way, the people that we need to take care of. And we will also take care of, in a good way, our people, right? Mm-hmm. They provide for their people. They take care of each other. They send love whenever they can and help whenever they have the ability to. And I think this is a nice idea. But with Al specifically, I'm not sure how deep this water runs.
Mm-hmm.
Anywho, Scarface, Al, or Snorky, as his friends called him.
Sorry, what?
Snorky? You know.
That's like a name you'd name a pug.
Yeah, well, it apparently was slang for like being a sharp-dressed man. Reezy top. But I think Scarface is a better nickname.
I'd go with Scarface. Don't get Al Snorky hated it. Out of your mouth.
Al was like, call me Snorky.
No. Yes. No, because he's like, don't talk about something I'm sensitive about.
He's like, no, I'm insecure about that.
I'm insecure about my Scarface.
That being said, time moves on. We get to my favorite part. Chicago.
Yes.
Chicago, Chicago.
There's a lake they call Lake Michigan. I think I'm really fitting in this city. It's my perfect cup of tea.
No.
It's a city that's inviting. It's a city that's exciting. It's a city for a girl who's just like me.
Anyway. You watched that?
I watched the Chicago episode a lot.
Okay.
That being said, in 1919, Al went to Chicago. Mm-hmm. There are, again, some different reasons as to why he went out there. Some people say he was so great. He was an up-and-comer. They said, hey, we've got an expansion opportunity. Go, go.
It was for the Bosco Sticks.
It was for the Bosco Sticks. They said, we have an empire waiting to be created.
So did he move out there, we think, to like take over stuff out there?
So I actually lied. There are two other versions of why Al went out to Chicago. And the first is that Al Capone assaulted the leader of another gang called the Whiteheads. And he essentially assaulted the leader of this group and left him for dead, but did not kill him. And so the leader of the Whitehead gang was alive and could identify him. And the gang itself basically said, listen, we were coming for you, Al. So there is the option that perhaps Al went to Chicago because of this. Something else that I found very interesting was that he might have also ended up in Chicago after Sonny was born, because from what I can see, it seems that he might have taken a job as a very legit bookkeeper in Baltimore so that he could, you know, start to get away from gang life, make a better life for himself and his family, and just be sort of legit, not worry about all of the impending pressure and doom of life in gangs in inner city New York. But essentially, if he did this, and I think it's quite possible, again, early Al Capone is really hard because there's so many varying accounts of what happened. And I can assure you, it is very difficult to research and figure out what is what. On the My Al Capone Museum page, at one point, he's like, if you repeat a lie enough, it becomes history. And I was like, you got that right, because the amount of Francoluccio stuff I saw was insane, let alone trying to figure out how he moved across the country. But anyway, so he essentially goes out to Baltimore in this version of the tale, and he gets a job working for the Aiello Construction Company, I believe. It was a very real, and I need to stress this again, a very legit construction company. And so allegedly he goes to Chicago when his father dies, actually, of a heart attack in 1920. And so this leads him to leave. And essentially, he gets hooked up with his old connections to sort of get him a life out there, get started. In this version of the story, Peter Aiello, the owner of the company that Capone worked for, actually lent Capone $500, which, as far as I can tell, would be around $6,500 today, so that Al could go on to do something bigger and better. And I just think that's very interesting. Al Capone allegedly, I can't confirm this, threw him a parade years later, I think in Cicero, Illinois, which is very interesting because that isn't the first place they start in Illinois. That is the second headquarters they have. So just a little curious tidbit there. But I do think that that is a very possible version of events. We do know that Al's dad died of a heart attack in 1920. Al's mom didn't die until 1957. So some interesting versions there. But I think it could really be any of them, truly.
Oh, okay.
So it's both are possible, honestly. Yeah. And I think that honestly, if anyone's going to be a Northeast to the Midwest transplant, Al Capone was a really great guy for the job because he had those personal relation skills. He knew how to make you feel good, mm-hmm, regardless of what was going on, and not for nothing. All due respect. Much love and respect. That's not necessarily like the Northeast's strong suit.
Depends.
Stereotypically. So,
I mean, if we're going on stereotypes, New York City is not going to give you the warm and fuzzies usually.
Yeah.
So if we're going from that to the Midwest, yeah, you probably feel better out there.
Yeah. And Al was really good at keeping up with that face. You know what I mean? Mm. So Al goes out to Chicago, and Johnny Torrio is kind of like the boss that took Al under his wings.
Okay.
He wasn't the full boss. He was second in command. But that's pretty fucking close in a big organization like this, right?
Absolutely.
So he came out there. He joined the Colosimo mob, So when Al moved, he became a bouncer at another brothel. It was pretty much his thing, but he, like I said, does not turn down a good time. And he really liked to sample the product, you know?
Son of a bitch.
Yeah. So
at this time when he moved out there, did he move his wife and son with him?
Yeah, May and Sonny came with him.
Okay.
Which was good and bad, and we'll get to it in a little bit. But while he was testing said product, we believe this is when he got syphilis.
Okay.
Was there a treatment, if not a cure? You betcha.
All right.
Did Al get it? No.
Ooh.
He was afraid of needles. Apparently more afraid of needles than whatever oozing was happening. So he just ignored it.
Come on, man. That was so preventable.
It was literally a minute clinic away.
I mean, so that could have just been like a vaccine or like some pills or whatever, and he could have been fine. I mean,
I don't think it was full on penicillin yet, but they had drugs that were at least treating it to a manageable degree, if not curing it.
I mean, I'm sure it was one of those things where if you got it early and got like hit it hard, you took care of it. But the longer you let it fester and get stronger and everything, like, the harder it would be to treat later. So,
yeah,
I'll be honest, that is not my strong suit. I really don't know anything about that stuff.
Well, we'll get into more of it later, but good for Al that he was alive in this time period and not today, because today something like 1 in 4 people have an STI. So I have a feeling if he was dipping his toe as much as he says he was, it probably would have been a lot earlier if it was today. That being said, doesn't matter because he still got syphilis and he still didn't treat it. So,
and so he just continued, sleeping around. So he's giving that to countless other people, including his wife.
Oh, yes. May definitely got it at some point.
Oh, God.
So time went on, and come 1920, the United States had put into place the Prohibition Ban. Abby, what is that? Well, for those of you who aren't me and oddly interested in this time period, the Prohibition was a time in the United States that I think is really fascinating. It was in effect from 1920 to 1933 and provided a fabulous field, an up-and-coming industry for organized crime.
Correct.
But it essentially just banned the selling and buying of alcohol. You can't really prohibit someone from consuming something, so all they could do was make the marketplace interactions illegal, right?
Yes, which is why speakeasies are now kind of a fun thing that we get to joke about, but back then it really was a real thing.
Right.
Real speakeasies existed, and there was a code word, and you did have to sneak in, and there were like hidden underground bars.
Yes, and I think that's so cool.
That's so fun.
Just because it's fun. It feels Nancy Drew for an espresso martini.
I'd go one time. It'd be all blues, no clues. It'd get busted.
Yeah.
And I'd be arrested.
Yeah.
And I would go and I'd get like a Shirley Temple. Like, I just want to go and see.
For
and
the
look.
Sake of going.
Yeah. Just to like say I did and be like, oh, I just want to see. I want to go. And it would be like, wee woo, wee woo. And I'd be like, God damn it.
Not again.
Shit.
Just kidding. It's your first time.
So that would be me. I don't know.
I really like them. In fact, I still really like to go to quote unquote speakeasies in cities. I like to find them and be like, I'll knock 3 times on the third panel to the right, you know? But
anyway, Al Capone loved Prohibition era.
He did. And it was just such a good opportunity. You know?
Hells yeah.
I mean, people were already drinking. The Prohibition did not it did not delay the start of people drinking alcohol. It just said, you can't do this for a little bit. And a fun fact, when the Prohibition ended, it wasn't because they were like, alcohol is so good. We love it. They just liked money. It got them more money and we needed more money. And they said, you know what? We'll sell alcohol again.
I just think it's just funny because it's like, oh, you just got back from fighting for your country in World War I. We're going to arrest you for having a drink.
You know the kind of stuff they gave you over there? Doesn't matter. Can't even have a sip of alcohol.
Mm-mm.
That being said, Torrio, the second in command, he essentially told him that the key to getting through this was to lay low. You know, don't go buying fancy cars and spending luxuriously if you're not supposed to have luxury money. And Al didn't really like that advice. I know that it seems low in today's standards, but according to the University of Missouri price indexes, Al bought a house. The average cost of a house was $4,000 for like a modest home, you know?
No.
It'd be so nice. Oh my God.
I mean, obviously adjust that for now and it would not be that, but still.
But still, and Al ended up buying a house for $5,500. So that was significantly more than the median, right? And even if you do the inflation calculator, it is only a little over $100,000 today, which seems low, but inflation's a bitch. What can I say?
Yes.
So a fun fact was that his house was at 7244 South Prairie Avenue in Chicago. It was on the south side, AO. But even today, it is still in a hot spot of crime, which I just think is fascinating.
Ooh.
Most people, when they hear about Chicago, they're like, ah, you know, I get it. But that's honestly almost entirely in the south side of Chicago. I mean, the north side, don't get me wrong, it's not perfect. But when you think about the gangs and the violence, that is primarily south of the tracks.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's interesting to be able to look this up in coordination with the things that he did and
where
see history repeating itself.
Yeah.
According to Chicago's crime map viewer, it gives you crime stats from 2 weeks, and it was the week before you look and the 2 weeks prior to that. So from 3 weeks ago to 1 week ago in a 1 mile radius of 7244 South Prairie Avenue in Chicago, to my understanding, there were 850 crimes that took place. Of those, 138 were classified as violent, meaning they were homicide, sexual assault, robbery, aggravated assault, or aggravated battery.
Wow.
Chicago.
Wow. Okay.
But you can go see it if you want.
I'll pass.
I would. I would.
I'll Google Maps the shit out of it.
I would love that. It's pretty.
Perfect. It's pretty. I've heard.
Yeah.
Sounds great.
From me.
Yeah. So. Heard from a friend. Yep.
Something else going on, though, in Al's life at this time was, again, his home life. We just talked about his home.
Mm.
But, you know, he's got a wife and kid that live there. So May, while allegedly not being involved in the business, had gone entirely gray by the time she was 28.
Wow.
Which to me says stress. I mean, whether or not she knows what's going on, she knows enough of what's going on to be freaked the fuck out.
Genetic stress or her body's fighting off an infection that she probably doesn't know.
Right. And also, son with a essentially like a disability.
Yeah, he can't hear out of one ear. Which, and I'm sure there's no services back then for him.
Right. The only services that there were for Sonny were actually in New York. So the family had to travel back and forth from Chicago to New York to get Sonny help.
Oh, the poor thing.
Which is just a lot of travel for the fucking 20s. Okay.
Yeah.
Especially for a man who's doing all of these crimes, that makes pretty much everything federal. Like right off the bat.
Excellent.
Just throwing that out there.
Love it.
Once again, do we get any criminal charges for this? No. But just so you know.
Love it and love to see it. Okay. Great.
So Sonny's condition obviously was getting worse, and that makes these trips back and forth more frequent. But I will say something that helped Al. Hurt Al, I'm not sure, was that he had more frequent communication with his old pals back in New York.
Mm.
He was in the neighborhood more often, so he was able to sort of keep tabs a little more frequently. Have a phone call, catch up, go sit at lunch, have a gabagool, you know? How do you say that? Is it gabagool or gabagool? What the fuck is that?
It's capicola.
Capicola? Is it neck meat? That's what Google told me.
Well, if Google said it, yeah, I mean, it's a kind of meat, but it's gabagool. I mean,
not very gabagool. So May was not in a great place. Al was in a fabulous place. And Sonny was just out here trying to deal, you know? May allegedly, well, May or Al or both were infertile and had pregnancy issues. So Sonny was their only child together. They did have a few other pregnancies, to my understanding, but they were all either miscarried or stillbirth.
Oh my goodness.
Which is just so traumatic and devastating. And in a time where you can't, from my understanding, it's not like you can know you're going to have a stillbirth before you give birth at this time. So it's like a miscarriage and then a hopes up and then the same devastating feeling with, I'm sure, a different complex set of emotions, you know?
I mean, at this time, I don't know how rare it was for you to give birth and some of your kids die. I mean,
it's always impressive to me when there's a lot of children and all of them make it to adulthood. But here's one.
Yeah, but I mean, the odds of that, and that doesn't mean that it makes it any better, but it can be a sign of the times between.
Right. Medical advancements.
Yeah. Medical advancement. Just in what we know, science, what we know about cleanliness, what we know about hygiene, what we know, anything.
So, I don't know. It just breaks my heart. May has had such a hell of a few years, you know? And allegedly, I can't speak to it. I wasn't there. But allegedly, she's told Sonny multiple times to never do what his father did because it breaks her fucking heart.
Of course. I mean, they're likely both struggling with what it is, but I don't know what her outlet is, but he definitely has one.
And it's not her.
And it's going to the brothel.
Right.
So he is, you know, he's got elsewhere to go. She's at home with her son.
Yeah.
And that is probably it.
I am assuming that what she means is his extramarital curriculars.
Yeah, you know, that and the, you know.
Violence and.
Yeah, the violence and harming other people and illegal activity. Yeah. And she's probably always looking over her shoulder every time she goes anywhere, either that someone else is going to hurt her or the cops are coming or
her kid or Al gets arrested and everything's gone. And now she's in a new place with her hard of hearing son who she already is bending over backwards to accommodate. Mm-hmm. And it's the 20s and she doesn't have a husband anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's a terrifying cloud looming over your head.
I wouldn't want that.
No. So now that we have the backstory, now that we're in my sweet home, Chicago, and we're at the point in Al's life where he's, you know, he's going to start climbing the ranks. He got there. He got settled. He got his little roots planted.
Great.
Sure, he came out to Chicago for any number of reasons. He got his scars for being a little shady or for going too hard to get a lady. But despite the fact that Scarface is an absolutely badass name for a man in the mafia, he actually preferred Snorky.
No.
I can't believe that.
I simply refuse.
Call me Snorky.
No.
Snorky.
Or just Al, then.
Al, you can call me Al.
That's it. That's fine.
Do, 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 do.
No, it's good.
Anyway, so we do need to talk about one major event that gives background to the mafia that Al Capone was walking into. See, Johnny Torrio, who had been, again, like that mentor to Al, he was the second in command on Al's arrival. Johnny helped create the Chicago Outfit, which was the mob that Al would soon take over.
Mm-hmm.
See, Colosimo, who had been running the mob, basically had been a very successful mobster. He had been very successful, and Torrio was his right-hand man.
Mm-hmm.
The same way Capone would later become Torrio's right-hand man.
Okay.
And he was a tough guy. You know what I mean? He had no problem taking care of business. He got what he wanted. And typically what he wanted was a shrewd business move. Like, he did think things through like that. But he had gotten married and eventually got divorced. And Torrio had sort of picked up the slack, if you will, in those rough times.
Mm-hmm.
And so one thing that I really like about Torrio is that Elmer Iray, who was like a U.S. Treasury official at the time, called him the smartest and, I dare say, the best of all the hoodlums. Best referring to talent, not morals.
Okay. That's a way to put it.
That it is. Some background that we haven't mentioned is how the mob got into bootlegging. Because Torrio saw this as an opportunity. He said, hold up. There is a demand in the market that there is nary a supply for.
Correct.
And dare I say, we could supply it. And Colosimo was like, no. Well, my assumption of how this conversation goes, and I'll put a big asterisk, this is my assumption on how it went, was Colosimo was like, no, we're doing enough already, and I'm stressed. And Torrio was like, look, we can be billionaires, or our version of it. We can be thousandaires.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Colosimo was like, I literally have so much on my plate. I cannot take on another commitment. Which, relatable.
Couldn't relate more, honestly.
Truly. But during his divorce and eventual skittering off to Indiana to get married to a choir singer, Colosimo returned. He said, hey, I have a wife now. I'm back to it. I'm here. And when he was getting back to business, he had a little meeting with an associate, a new associate. So he goes to his little cafeteria, cafe, and they sit down to have a session. But before he even sits down, he's shot in the head.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they took care of business. All right. Allegedly.
Mm.
Torrio might have been the one to take care of business.
Allegedly. Abby, come on.
Per the reports.
Alleged.
Seemingly. Not confirmed.
Obviously.
That being said, as the right-hand man, Torrio then took over. And would you look at that? We started doing bootlegging.
Would you just look at it?
Ain't it funny how those cards fell, huh? So now Torrio's in charge, and Al's number two.
And he loves number two.
He loves the twos.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So this is where Torrio and Capone take over. Torrio at the top of the Chicago outlet, Al as his second in charge, and it takes less than 5 years for Al to go from, however you believe it, ran out of New York City for safety to the man who owns Chicago. Owns Chicago.
How long did you say?
5 years. He had a 5-year plan.
I've not done that in 5 years.
I've done one load of laundry in 5 years. One.
I'm impressed when I wash it and put it away in the same day.
Yes. And Al's like, and I'm going to take over this neighborhood, and I'm going to take over this spot, and I'm going to make this connection. And then he owns Chicago. Literally, from alcohol to the public to police and politicians. It's estimated at one point he had bought out over half of all of the police in Chicago.
I don't doubt that.
Insane.
Wow.
5 years. So next week, we're going to talk about how Al climbs to the top.
Aw, man, come on.
How he finds a way to stay there. And if we have time, how he never got fucking caught for anything other than tax fraud.
Mm.
Alcatraz.
Oh, Alcatraz. And his
untimely death.
Oh, I can't wait.
So, until then, hug your kids, get tested for STDs, and if you have treatment, just fucking take the shot, okay?
It's available. It's all available to you. Just do it. There's no shame in it. Just get yourself well again. Just do it.
And once again, and I will say this every day, do not fuck with the IRS. Don't do it.
Don't do it.
Don't do it. So
I'm not going to do it. I was just thinking about it.
I was just thinking about it.
I did it.
He did.
He did.
So I'm so excited to talk to you all about that next week.
All right.
But that was what I have for you today.
Well, thank you so much. That was a very good part one, and I'm very much looking forward to part two / possibly part three.
I think in all honesty, it's probably going to have to be three parts because there's a lot to it. But I think this is a really necessary setup for the background and what's going on because, like we talked about, so much of the mafia stuff is relations. It's people, it's understanding the dynamics and why your best friend might not be your best friend.
My best friend is definitely my best friend, but
well, we are, but I'm
Italian. Also my platonic soulmate slash.
But I'm Irish, so are we really?
Of course we are. We don't give a shit about that.
I know.
You're my little bestie.
I'm just kidding.
And my little soulmate.
Yeah.
You brought me flowers today.
I did do that.
She did. She picked me some wildflowers today and brought them over.
I'm just cute like that.
Abby's adorable. And she's a damn good podcast host. So.
So anyway, if you want to see the people, the places, the things, Al Capone and his little baseball days.
Oh, yeah. I'll try to find a picture to post on the gram.
You can do that on our Instagram. And you would find that at About Time for True Crime Pod with periods in between every word. So that is ABOUT period TIME period FOR period TRUE period CRIME period POD because podcast was too long. But if you, much like Instagram, wanted to send us something longer, your thoughts, your feelings, your general gist of the day. You'd have any fun Al Capone facts? You have any of his little bobbleheads? Let us know. You can do that to our email, but Allie, where would they email that?
Oh, also, if you have a pod pet that you want to share with us, please, dear God, do
please.
That.
Please.
Also, do you have a true crime case that is close to you, like a something that happened in your town or where you grew up or something that you know and you want to share that with us and you want us to share that with the ATFTC family, then you can email that to us and let us just confirm in the email that we can share it. Otherwise, we won't. But if you want to email that to us, you would do that to abouttime4tc@gmail.com. So that's ABOUTTIME, numeric4tc@gmail.com. We love you. We love to see you. And we love to hang out with you. And if I look at my clock, that was
About Time for True Crime. Bye. See you later, Snorky, you see?
Ah, you see?